all because of a double dog dare. Take your notes. I'm Robin. Welcome to East Lake Church. That's our series, The Double Dog Dare. And last week we had two dares. We called them prayer dares. The first one is, I'm willing to pray that God would help me reach out to other people, that other people, I could just let them know God cares about you and you can turn to Him. And then the second thing is I would pray that God would fill me for compassion, especially for people that I don't have compassion for. I'm Robin. Welcome to Eastlake. We call this a church for everyone. And we had this metaphor last week. If you found a priceless Rembrandt painting, so they go for about $40 million. You're at your grandmother's house. She's gone into the nursing home. You're cleaning out the basement. And there's the Rembrandt. You see it right there. But it's all covered with dust and mud and dirt. You can barely tell it's a Rembrandt. And sometimes we get so caught up in seeing the dirt in other people's life and the dust and the imperfections that we can't see the priceless work of art, the workmanship that God's done, the priceless person that God has made. We can't see that because all the dirt. Now let's take the metaphor a little further. So you find the Rembrandt and you're thinking to yourself, oh, man, I can't wait to tell my boss that I quit. $40 million. Now, who of us would run out into the backyard with a bucket and a sponge and a hose and start scrubbing that painting? Or take a paint scraper and get the dirt off? Or maybe we'd get, you know, some pine saw and pour it all over it and scrub it, or some Ajax or some steel wool? Probably not. If you were holding your retirement in your hands, $40 million, you'd know enough to take it to an expert. You'd know enough that you weren't qualified, that you had to take the painting to an expert. And the expert would know how to go through a step-by-step process to restore it. And do you know that's how God treats us? He's the expert. And He knows how to take us through a step-by-step process. Life is a step-by-step process. Now, here's the big idea this weekend. Write it in your notes. Here's the dare. Take your next right step. All through life, whether it's my relationship with Jesus or my relationship with my wife or a girlfriend or boyfriend or somebody at work or my retirement or my health or these kids that I have to parent, there's always the next right step. And the expert knows how to show us what the next right step is. So this weekend, the double dog dare is you could take your next right step in life, but especially your relationship with Jesus. Years ago, there was someone that came, and they were a young person. They were in college, this guy, and he wanted to make more friends. He was having a difficult time, and he came to me and says, gosh, I'm trying to find friends, and I can't find any friends. It's so difficult. And I said to him, what if, let's try something different. What if you don't focus on finding friends? What if you focus on being more friendly? What if that was your next right step? The only thing you have to think about, just focus on your next right step. Be more friendly. When you're at the bank waiting in line, be more friendly. When you're at the grocery store, when you're at work, when you're at school, when you're talking with people and socializing, you know, when you're buying dinner at 7-Eleven, I mean, just be more friendly. That's your next right step. And friends started falling out of the sky for them. Because life is a step-by-step process, and we always have a next right step. And that's the double dare today, the double dog dare. We're going to look at an old story in the Bible about David and Goliath, and we'll get some insights about how David can teach us how do you just take your next right step in life. Now, David lived about 3,000 years ago. David came from a town that was on the wrong side of the tracks. He came from a little town that nobody wanted to move there. Nobody liked his town, although it eventually became quite famous because it was the town that Jesus was born in. David was from Bethlehem. It eventually became very special. I remember when we were thinking about coming out to West Valley, and I would tell people, maybe we're going to, you know, locate the church out. Oh, you don't want to go to West Valley. Nobody wants to live out there. Nobody likes West Valley. But I thought something special might happen out here with God. I came and drove around the neighborhoods, and I thought, I think I like all these types. I like these people. Not everybody that goes to Walmart, but most of them. And I just thought something special could happen out here. Something special happened in Bethlehem. And you know, you may be in a situation right now in your life, and it may look like nothing could ever happen here, and it could be exactly the place that something special can occur. David's from Bethlehem, and there's eight boys in the family, good Utah family, and he's the youngest. So David gets all the lousy jobs. In fact, his family runs a little farm and they have some sheep, and David's the family shepherd. So he has to take care of the sheep. And he lives in an area that has mountain lion and bear, and he's having to protect these sheep all the time. And so he's alone quite often, too. He's a shepherd all by himself, and he's alone. And it's when he's alone, being a shepherd, that David discovers, I'm not alone in life. I can turn to God, and God cares about me. And if you came today and you feel alone, you know the best thing about, there's maybe the only good thing about feeling I'm all alone is when God convinces you that you're not. And he convinces David, and you're not alone in this. And one day, a man named Samuel, which was head of the national church, in this day, everybody was Jewish, they all went to one big church, and Samuel kind of ran that church. And he comes into Bethlehem, and I mean, everybody's like, oh man, the big church guy is here. And he goes right to Jesse's house. And Jesse's thinking, I didn't clean my house, you didn't tell me you were coming, and you know, and here comes the big church guy up there. And he said, one of your sons has been chosen by God to be the next king. And Jesse's thinking, from Bethlehem? And I'm from a small little family. We're just working folks here, man. God wants to do something special in my life. And Samuel says, go get all of your sons and bring them in here and have them pass by me. And I'm gonna tell you which one God chooses. And so he gets his sons together and they all pass by. And the first one, the very firstborn son, is a big, big, tall, good-looking, athletic guy. And he comes to him. Samuel sees him coming through the door. He says, oh, that must be the guy right there, man. Look at the size of that guy. That must be. And the Lord says, I've not chosen him. And if you're taking notes, write this down. God said the greatest thing to him. It says, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. Boy, isn't that encouraging? It's just such a lesson in life. Way back then, they were still caught up in image. Samuel says, well, that's got to be the guy right there. And God says, no, no. No, the inside matters more than the outside. And so all these different sons come in, and they pass by Samuel, and Samuel says, well, none of those is the one that God is picking. And he says, do you have any more sons? And Jesse says, well, I have one young little son. I mean, he takes care of the sheep. I mean, we barely ever see the guy. He stinks like goat and sheep down there. And Samuel says, go get him. And then let's read what happens after they're looking at your notes. And the Lord said, as David comes in, all sheep poop all over him, hair going every which way. And the Lord said, this is the one, anoint him. So as David stood there among his brothers and paused, the person that wrote it had to have a sense of humor. Because you know the little brother right now is going, neener, neener, neener. Give me the lousy jobs and punk me all the time and everything. How you like me now? Right in front of all of his brothers. Samuel took the flask of oil and brought it. He had brought and anointed David with the oil, and the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David from that day on. Amazing. So all of a sudden, this day completely changes David's life. You know, it was just a normal, every ordinary day. So don't look for special days. You don't need them. Because this was just a regular old day that was passing by. It was like a Thursday at 11:30, and all of a sudden God says, I'm picking you because I see your heart. I see the inside of you. Keep working on the inside. And so later, what happens is, I wanted to tell you this part right here. Now, there's a problem. Israel already has a king. So they just named you Miss America, but they have a Miss America that's still Miss America, and she's not given the little, what do they call those things, tialas? I wouldn't know that, the girls would. But anyways, she's not giving that up, man. It's like, I'm Miss America, you know? Well, the king, I mean, he's not excited to hear somebody else's king. And so this is what I wanted to tell you. When you are chosen for something, it doesn't mean that it doesn't come with problems. Because there's a big problem. There's a whole nother king with a whole nother family. Sometimes God will choose me for something, and I have to take my next right step, and then all the problems come, and I say, well, this can't be God. It's not easy. Certainly God wouldn't give me anything in life that included problems. But there's a big problem for David. There's a whole nother king and a whole nother family. Shortly thereafter, David's back with the sheep, and Israel gets in a war with the Philistines. and it's close to Bethlehem, and three of his brothers become soldiers, and they go to battle with King Saul, and Jesse decides he wants to send a care passage to his sons, and so he picks David to deliver the care package, and as he goes and he sees his brothers and all this battle there, that's where he recognizes how we take our right step, and we're going to look at three things. Number one, write in your notes, put the word see, S-E-E. You have to be able to see a step to take a step. David gets there and the battle's raging and in life there's always a next right step. If you're in a conflict with your spouse right now, there's a next right step. If you're having problems at work, there's a next right step. If you want to be promoted, there's a next right step. If you want to support your children in a certain way, there's a next, if you want financial help, I want to lose weight, there's always just a single next right step. And David gets in the most unpredictable circumstance that you'd think he would see his next right step. And let's read what happens. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion of Gath, stepped out from the lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. He's seeing something. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." David said to King Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." And here's the thing. Everybody else sees a giant, and David sees an opportunity. And do you know when I'm like focused on the giants in my life, I have no idea what my next right step is. All I can see is the giant. And I can understand why they would have been like, whoa, this guy right here. Look at how the Bible describes Goliath. I'll just read it. It's not in your notes. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He's all covered in bronze. He also wore a bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, and the tip of iron on his spearhead weighed 15 pounds. So this is like a movie, you know. This is like the Avengers. I mean, this guy comes out. This would make a good movie. He comes out, and this guy's ginormous. The largest and tallest man in the world right now, his name is Kozin. He's 8 feet 3 inches. He has a rare disease. It's called amygdala. And amygdala means that the gland right here, the growth hormone, gets in the pituitary gland, and you never stop growing. He's 8 feet 3 inches. He just got married last year. He's from Turkey. Acromegaly. It's the disease. They also call it giantism. The largest person ever on record was an American. His name was Robert Wadlow. He was 8 feet 11 inches tall, and he was still growing when he died in his early 20s. Acromegaly. Giantism. It's a disease. So it's not that far-fetched that Goliath could be 9 feet tall. Now, this particular disease, it comes with a problem. Your joints begin to stiffen up, and you can at some point hardly run, and then eventually you can't run, you can hardly walk, and most people finish their lives in a wheelchair, and they die young. So what most people think is this was a great bluff by the Philistines. They dressed up this giant in all this armor, and he slowly goes out to the battle lines, and he roars at him, and he cusses, and he looks so huge, and the Israelites are so afraid, and they don't realize that the giant couldn't even fight them, probably not even hurt them, because he has a disease, acromegaly. His joints are all stiff and he can barely move. Somebody has to even carry a shield for him. They're bluffing. Am I gonna notice that sometimes the giants in my life that I see, they look so dangerous and so big? When I see all the faults, the person that I'm married to, and bless her heart, but she has issues, and I'm just playing. But, I mean, you get married to someone, you think it's just going to be all great, and then you find out, what happened to you? And they just seem giant. They seem so big. The problems in the marriage seem so big. You'll never overcome them. They seem like a 9-foot person all covered with armor, and they roar at you, and they say you'll never be happy in your marriage. You picked the wrong person. It's never going to work out. And you see the giant from a long ways away, and it all looks true. You want to move your family to a bigger house. You're hoping for a promotion. You have to lose a lot of weight. And it's this ginormous giant. Here's what I've discovered. I see the giants in my life, and as I see them, they look so real. Other people's faults and their shortcomings look so giant to me. They'll never change. I'm never going to be happy in my marriage. I'll never have that. I will never graduate. Boy, you're a freshman in college. You're like, I'll never, ever make it. It's a giant. I'll never pay off this debt. These school loans, I'll be like paying these off when I'm 90. They're giants. And that's all you can see. And when all you can see is the giants, you don't know where to take your next right step. You forget that life is a series of steps and that the expert, he knows the very next step. And all you have to take is the next step. And David, he doesn't see the giant. He sees the opportunity. He's like, oh, man, if I'm going to be king, I better marry into the family now and start learning how royalty lives. All he can see is his next right step. What giant are you facing in your life? And what if it's like Goliath that has that disease, giantism, and it's so big and strong and it looks like it could do anything, but what if it can't? What if it's just life trying to bluff you? It's big but not dangerous. It's tall but not tough. Can't even hurt you. It's a powerless giant. But it can get your attention, and you can miss your opportunity, and you can't see your next right step. Now, right in the second thing in your notes, and we'll read a little bit more, right in Simplify. David sees the opportunity and he decides, man, I have to kill this giant so I can have the king's wife and keep going. And so here's what he does. He goes to King Saul and he tells King Saul, this is my day. I'm the guy. Pick me. I'll kill the giant. And King Saul looks him up and down and he looks right in his eyes and he says, no. No, you can't do it. I'm not letting you. You're not able. You're not qualified. No, you can't do that. You know, in life when you have that sickening, hollow feeling because you knew there was something you were really supposed to do and someone told you, you can't do that, and you listened. And then later there's that hollow feeling in your life, and it can go on for years because you know it was something that you were supposed to do, but you listen to someone tell you no. And King Saul says to David, no way, man. No is my answer. You're just a kid. You can't do that. And David, he won't take no for an answer. And sometimes in life, you have to do the same, and so do I. Something will tell me no. No, my marriage will never get on track, and you have to stop and say, I'm not taking no for an answer. I'll never understand how much God loves me. You have to stop and say, I'm not taking. David comes to the king and says, you don't understand. I've killed lions and bears. I know how to do this. I'm not taking no for an answer. You have to let me go. I'm going. And he convinces the king to let him go. He makes it very, very simple. He just says, my life has to be very, very simple now. I'm going to do my next right step, king, whether you tell me no or not. He convinces Saul. And look what Saul does. Then Saul outfitted, you can see it in your notes, then Saul outfitted David as a soldier in armor. He put his bronze helmet on his head and he belted his sword on him over the armor. David tried to walk around, but he could hardly budge. David told Saul, I can't even move with all this stuff on me. I'm not used to this. And circle this. And he took it off. And he took it off. David gets very, very simplified. I guess it probably was cool. I mean, can you imagine David gets there and the king pulls him aside and he gives him all the latest military toys? I mean, any guy would have been fried on, man. This is awesome. You know, he's got the latest guns and armor and everything. And I'm sure it was really cool. The king says, you need all this stuff if you're going to succeed. I wanted to read you something. a student bought all new books, a new desk, a new chair, and a special book rest to make it easier to read. And he sat down in his chair and fell asleep. I know people, they plan all week, all the yard work they're going to do, and they go to Home Depot, and they spend hours and hours finding the right tools and the right hoses, and they just get all the different stuff that they need, and they spend like 5 hours getting all the right equipment at Home Depot, and they pack it all in there, and by the time they get home and unpack it, they're too tired to do any yard work. And that's David. David looks at it and he says, "You're making this way too complicated. I just need to take my next step, which is to go fight the giant." What are you complicating in your life? Maybe you're looking down the road and you're saying, "Oh man, there are so many things coming at me." What are you trying to be that you're not? And it's very, very complicated. I tell you, I got set free one time when I was a new Christ follower. I had a very difficult time learning to pray. I'd never heard anybody pray, and I went to church, and I wanted to take my next right step, and I heard everybody was praying and praying about things, and so I would kneel down before I went to bed, and I figured, you know, you were supposed to kneel when you pray, and so I knelt down and I started praying, and you know, I prayed for everything I could possibly think of. My goal was to pray 5 minutes. I wanted to pray 5 minutes. I prayed for everything I heard on the news, all my friends. I prayed for all the world peace and Mother Teresa. And I just went on, and I prayed everything possible that there was to pray. And then I peeked up at the clock, and 2.5 minutes had gone by. I was like, how do people do this? And then I moved into a house with some other guys my age that were Christ followers, and there was this one guy. His name was Pat Calvo. He seemed like he could pray forever. We shared a room, and at nighttime, when it was time to go to bed, I would go. The first night I went in there, and there's Pat kneeled down like a little angel praying on his bed. And I thought, oh, I shut the door. That's private, you know. Well, I gave him quite a bit of length of time. I gave him about 10 minutes, thinking, surely he's done now. I opened up the door. He's still praying, kneeled down praying. This goes on for a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. I'm thinking, I'm with a spiritual guru. I mean, how does anybody do this? Finally, I have to go to work the next morning. I'm tired. So I open up the door, and I slowly go into, and I get into my, he's still over at the bed with his hands like this. He's like this, just praying. And I get into bed, and I lay down. I think, wow, it's been an hour and a half. This is amazing. And then all of a sudden, I hear a, he'd been sleeping. He fell asleep, and I thought to myself, you know what the problem was? For days before that occurred, I was trying to be like Pat. Just like Saul tried to make King David into something that he wasn't. He said, I know the best thing for you. Don't let anybody do that to you. God didn't make you to be somebody else. And listen, your next right step is your next right step. You can't take somebody else's next right step. It's your, he made you with your nose and your eyes and your body and your spirit and your background and all your stuff. He made you to be you, not to be somebody else. It's your, and David says, King Saul, I can't be that guy. I have to keep it very, very simple. I just need to go. Let's look how he does it. The right next thing is simplicity. Was that one? Now go to stretch, number three. This idea of stretching, David said, you come against me with sword and spear. So now he's talking to Goliath. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver me into your hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. All those gathered here will know that this is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him, which would take a lot of flexibility. A while back, a buddy and I decided that we're going to try to get in shape, so we bootlegged some of the P90X DVDs, that's my true confession, and we got those, and we decided we're going to do the P90X thing, which is, insane. And you, there's a guy, perfectly fit guy on the TV that does all these exercises, and you do them for like 90 minutes, and it's ridiculous. And so we watched him, and we did all these exercises, and it was really, really super difficult. And I'm looking through all the different modules, because there's a few different modules, and one of them says yoga. And I said, oh, man, that's the one I'm doing next time. I mean, yoga's got to be way easier than this crap I'm doing. And so about the fourth time, we decide we're going to do the yoga. And in my mind, I'm just picturing all those old ladies in the tutus or the onesies or whatever that sit around and do a little twisting and talking, and that's the yoga. I'm thinking, that's the way I want to work out. Man, they have this thing called the downward dog. I mean, you have to put your hands on the floor and your feet back there and your butt up high. I saw parts of my body I'd never seen except for with a mirror. I mean, and the stretching was unbelievable, and it burned, and it went on and on and on and on. It was way, way too long. And there was, I'm not playing. There was muscles that I found I never even knew I had. All this stretching with this yoga, and it burned, and it burned, and it burned, and it was difficult. And I wasn't flexible till after I stretched. And David gets to the point here and review it. The first thing is he sees the opportunity. He doesn't see the giant. And then he just simplifies. He says, no, I can't go like that. And then he has to stretch himself because he sees the giant and he has to go. He has to stretch himself and head towards it. And once he does do all that, he stretches himself and he does that, he becomes flexible. And right here, reaching into his bag and taking out the stone, he slung at it and stuck the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face downward to the ground. Now, I want you to see a progression, okay? This is what I want you to see today, next right step. Okay, so here's what happens. David sees the opportunity, the very first thing, and then he simplifies. He says, don't worry about it. I've done this before. I got my sling. And then when he gets there, he has to stretch himself. And once he does stretch himself, he has the courage to remember, wait a minute, the battle is the Lord's. He sees this big giant. He doesn't know he has giantism. He just sees this big giant. And what he tells to him, he says to the giant, he says, oh, he goes, you thought I was going to fight you by myself? Oh, man. The battle is the Lord's. And when the giant of finances come into my life, what I need to be able to say is, oh, you thought I was going to solve all my debt by myself? The battle is the Lord's. When your marriage goes south, and it will many, many times, I've been married 30 years. So pray for my wife. 30 years I've been married. And my marriage has gone south many times. Scary south. Scary. Where you're thinking, whoa, can we turn this around? And when that occurs, the battle, wait a second. I was thinking I could do everything to make a great marriage. The battle is the Lord's. When you have a boss at work that has favoritism and doesn't give you any credit at all, and all the other salesmen whiz by you, and you're like, how am I going to make quota? Oh, you thought you could do that. No. The battle is the Lord's. Some of you in your family is upset with you and hate you and disappointed in you, and you think we're never going to reconcile. The battle is the Lord's. But it wasn't until David stretched. See, now here's what I like to do. Let me give you my progression. This is God's progression. Here's my progression. Here's what I like to do. God, here's what I want you to do. Knock the giant down, and then I'll stretch and run over. Take care of all my finances, God. God, pick the right person for me to marry. Help me with these kids, God. I have to parent these kids. God, knock the giant down, God. Knock him down. Go get him, God. God, go knock that giant and knock him right down. I hit him in the head. Knock him down, God. I hit Jamie Smirtz in the head with a rock when I was in junior high school. We were having a rock fight. And Jamie put his head up past this little foundation he was hiding in. And I seen his head come up, and I threw a rock. I got him right in the forehead. I must have been like 100 feet away, and I heard it go clunk. It was a terrible thing to see Jamie go down. I won the rock fight, but he's still hard to see him go down like that. That rock hit him right there. Can you imagine this young kid running up and seeing a rock in this giant's head? See, what I want to see from God is knock him down like I did Jamie. Knock him down like God. Knock it down, God, and then I'll stretch and I'll run over there. But that's not how it works with Next Right Step. You stretch first. After I got done with that yoga class, I survived it. Oh, man, did I feel flexible. I was all stretched out. but I had to stretch first. What's your next right step in life with Jesus? A lot of different categories here. Maybe you come in here, and there's always people that come in because this is a church for everyone, and they don't even believe in God at all, and this is a great place for you to be, to process any ideas. And you know, maybe there's a little light down there, and you're like, well, maybe. And what's your next right step? Maybe you've been walking with Jesus quite a while, but everything just seems the same. There's no growth or anything. What's your next right step? Maybe you just got started. What's your next right step? For some of you, it might be to just start your day when you drive to work. Just pray in the car this time. Maybe pick up one of the free Bibles. If you don't have anything to do with God at all and you never think about God, maybe just this week, just very simply, all you do this week is just think, well, if there was a God that cared about me, would it make any difference at all? Go to the website and listen to more. What's your next right step in your relationship with Jesus? He'll knock the giant down after you take the step. Now look at the last thing here, the bottom line, and we're almost done. Don't give up until you succeed. I just love this part. Let me read it to you. Then David ran and stood beside him. So he runs over to the giant. He took Goliath's sword out of its holder, and he killed him by cutting off his head, just like he said God would let him do. When David came back from killing Goliath, Abner, who's the four-star general, brought him to King Saul. David was still holding Goliath's head. Tell me that wouldn't make a great movie. I mean, he walks back into camp, and he has the giants. I'm not talking about a mule deer now that you put up in your garage. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a giant's head. You know, all kinds of stuff still hanging down from its throat. And let me tell you why. David wanted to make sure he finished the job. He wasn't about to give up until he knew. I mean, he took the head with him. And that's the tenacity that can happen when I'm willing to live right next step, my next right step, just step through life. What giant's head do you need to hold up? And you'll need to. Maybe it'll be a house someday that you'll give a party and tour around. And you'll say, I remember the day that I didn't think we'd ever get a house. And I remember when I just simply started praying about it. Then I remember when I had to take the step of faith and believe that God was going to provide. I remember when everybody came and moved me into my house. And I really knew in my heart that it was different, that God had given, and that's your giant's head. Look at what God gave me. I serve the Lord. I'm not in this alone. He cares about me. Look at it. I remember when I almost got divorced and we were thinking about separating. Could we continue to live together? And then I just started to pray for my husband, and I started to ask God to work in his life and work in my life. And we started to talk with someone, and things moved along a little bit. And the next thing you know, I humbled myself to him. And now we've never, ever been happy. And that's your giant's head. You have it right in your hand. And that's what David had. What giant head do you need to hold? Next right step. Now take your connection cards, if you would, and on the back of them, there's three different areas I want you to look at. My next step. I need help with number one, number two, or number three. Some of you, maybe you can't see at all. There's lots of reasons you can't see. I've known lots of people in my life that are long ways away from God like I used to be. They're not even sure that he's up there. And maybe your next right step would just be entertain the idea. You can't see your next right step. There's some big, huge giant in your way. The key is to take your eyes off the giant, put it on your opportunity, and you'll see your next right step. I need help with number two, which is to simplify. Someone's trying to make me be something I'm not. I've made life very, very complex, and I just need to simplify and just do my next right step. And number three, and this is an important one, you know, as you go through life and you have all kinds of different things happen and you come up to take your next right step, and as soon as you start it, there's a little bit of a burn. You think, oh, this hurts. If you'll press through the burn, it won't be long before the giant will be on the ground. And what if the giant, what if it has giantism? What if the big thing in your life that seems so great, what if it's not nearly as tough as it is tall? What if it's just big, but it can't really hurt you? That's what David discovered.